from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In 2010, the Supreme Court decided in Citizens United that political spending equals political speech and handed the political microphone to American billionaires. In 2012, they have picked it up with gusto. Moneyed interests, millionaires, billionaires, pouring cash without limit into the world of super PACs and negative ads. Now the president says he's in the game too. This hour on Point, super PACs, billionaires, and the new reality of American democracy. You can join the conversation. Is this free speech? Get over it? Or do we have a problem here, a crisis here? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Later this hour, we'll hear from big thinker Elizabeth Drew on just what she sees, where she sees our elections going. But let's turn our minds back for just a second here. Just a couple of years ago, the Supreme Court, with this momentous decision on Citizens United, and President Obama, very soon after, talking about it, making his position clear, in their face, in his State of the Union address, publicly announcing his disapproval of the new way.
It's time to put strict limits on the contributions that lobbyists give to candidates for federal office. With all due deference to separation of powers, last week the Supreme Court reversed a century of law that I believe will open the floodgates for special interests, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our elections.
Justice Alito did not like that, appeared to voice his objection right there in the hall. It went on. Here's October of 2010. President Obama again rejecting this super PAC world, the big money world. Here he was supporting Democratic California Senator Barbara Boxer, but he also spoke about his thoughts on super PACs.
All across America, special interests have poured millions of dollars into phony front groups. You've seen them. They're called the Americans for Prosperity or Moms for Motherhood.
He would have nothing to do with that. That was then. This week, the announcement out of the White House, out of the Obama camp. Oh, never mind. Super PAC money is so big that they are now in the game. On Tuesday, David Axelrod, senior advisor to the president, to his reelection campaign, told MSNBC's Morning Joe that the president still disagreed with super PACs, but needed to adapt to fit the current election climate.
The bottom line here is that the Citizens United decision was a bad decision from our perspective. It did open the floodgates, but now the rules are what the rules are.
Millions have already been flooding into Republican coffers. Now the president signaling to big money backers, hey, we want some of that too. We need it to compete in this environment, in this race. Joining me now from Washington is Dave Leventhal. He is political influence reporter. Yes, that is his title for Politico. Former editor of OpenSecrets.com. He's watching the super PACs and just where the money's coming from and going to. Dave Leventhal, thanks very much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
So what about big donors in this campaign? Big money we're used to. I mean, billions have been spent on campaigns before. But what about the role of big individual donors this time?
And that's really the story, because you got to remember that in the 2008 presidential campaign, we didn't have super PACs. Super PACs wasn't even a term at that point. And here we are 4 years later.
In fact, in 08, Dave, if I may, the story was a lot about the Internet making it possible for millions of Americans to chip in their 20, 30, 40 bucks and participate.
And certainly, and Obama was really a pioneer in this regard, too, in the sense that he has raised more money than any presidential candidate, any federal candidate for that matter, in U.S. history for a single election, raising about $750 million, a huge sum in this last election. Much of that was coming online, too. So the storyline has changed markedly in just 4 years, where these outside groups, super PACs being one of several that are in the game right now, are able to raise and spend unlimited sums of money. They're not required to take sums of money and only $2,500 increments as a campaign would be, or a slightly larger amount for a political party committee. These guys can, hey, get $1 million check, a $10 million check, whatever it may be, and then go ahead, turn around the next day, and spend that money advocating overtly for a presidential candidate, or for that matter, advocating against a presidential candidate, congressional candidate, or be it what it may.
Or for that matter, advocating for a presidential candidate and a policy for that candidate to pursue when and if they should win the White House. You're writing with Ken Vogel. Google and Politico, big dollar donors are becoming the story of the 2012 campaign. Give us a sense of that, Dave.
Super PACs have raised about $181 million over the past 2 years, the 2 years really that they've only been in existence. And about half of that, according to a new study, came from about fewer than 200 very, very wealthy individuals. So that says a mouthful right there. This
Wow.
is pretty much the diametric opposition to what we saw in 2008 in terms of the small dollar donations coming in. Now, it's important to note that the campaigns, whether it's Obama, Romney, Gingrich, Santorum, are raising money from small dollar donors. That hasn't gone away. What this is a whole new layer of the game that simply just couldn't have existed in 2008 because the laws were not conducive to this type of activity happening at the level that it's happening right now.
How important have those single donors' contributions been to the campaigns, let's say, of Newt Gingrich, or for that matter, the big winner in the last this week, Rick Santorum?
I think there's a couple of great examples that already have shown how this has markedly changed at least the Republican primary, where all the action, at least to this juncture, has been at. And just go back to Iowa. Newt Gingrich was doing extremely well in the polls at that point. He was riding high in mid-December, and then all of a sudden, a group called Restore Our Future, it's a super PAC that's supporting Mitt Romney, came in, bought up all the airwaves, started spending millions of dollars, and lo and behold, Newt Gingrich did not do all that well in Iowa when all was said and done. Flash to South Carolina. There's a group called Winning Our Future, not to be confused with Restoring Our Future. Apparently, they both like the future, but all the same, Newt Gingrich is being supported by this Winning Our Future group, sponsored by former staffers of his. They did the same thing. Spend millions of dollars in South Carolina. Newt Gingrich, of course, won South Carolina. And you can see in retrospect, if not a causal relationship with victory and spending, a strong correlation between the activity of the super PACs and the success of the candidates in certain contests.
And that coming back not just to money, but again, to your point in Politico, back to individual donors. In that case, casino magnate Sheldon Adelson and his wife.
Without question. And in fact, you mentioned probably the biggest of the big donors so far, and him and his wife have given about $10 million, so far as we know at this point, to Winning Our Future, the pro-Gingrich super PAC. But he's hardly alone. There's a gentleman named Foster Fries, who's a businessman, who's been giving to a group called Red, White, and Blue Fund, which is supporting Rick Santorum, hundreds of thousands of dollars, probably millions when all is said and done. But we also have Restore Our Future receiving $1 million from John Paulson, the hedge fund billionaire. Jeffrey Katzenberg, the big Hollywood mogul, has given $2 million to a group called Priorities USA Action, a super PAC that is supporting Barack Obama, and that this week, Barack Obama on Monday decided to throw his support behind, despite so many people feeling that it was a very, very hypocritical decision on his part to really change his direction and go and support the types of groups that, as you alluded to just a couple of minutes ago, he was opposing full-throatedly, full-heartedly just not too many months ago.
Let's put this in a little context. I mean, if you go back to 2004, you had a billionaire who leans strongly to the Democratic side of the ledger, the liberal side, George Soros. What was it, 20 million, 20 million plus? Was that so different from what's going on now, Dave?
It was, to an extent. And what you had back in 2004, you may remember the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth and other organizations like that.
That was against John Kerry by Bush
backers.
Exactly.
Sponsoring very negative, very very graphic advertisements against candidates. But they weren't able to take the same types of donations or fueled by corporate donations as they are now, number one. And also, too, they weren't able to overtly advocate for or against candidates whenever they wanted to, however they wanted to. The language that they had to use was slightly different than they can use now when effectively all the handcuffs are off. You can say whatever you want, whenever you want. And that really has changed the game. It's given these organizations the freedom to really pretty much run their operation as they see fit and be as aggressive as they really want to be.
Who's winning in this super PAC game so far, this new Citizens United? If you look at the bottom line for Republicans, for Democrats, who's hauling in more of this big money?
Restore Our Future, at least among these super PACs that are supporting a single presidential candidate, is sort of the granddaddy, at least at this point. It's brought in well over $20 million at this point, spent more than $18 million, and they clearly are in a very, very strong position, in part because of corporate contributions. You got to remember,
you're talking Mitt Romney's PAC here.
Mitt Romney's super PAC that's supporting him, and we found that in their latest disclosure reports, they had taken about $5.5 million from identifiable corporations. You could be a corporation, take $1 million out of your treasuries. Many of these were taking at least six-figure amounts out of their treasury and just handing it over to the super PAC, which in turn was supporting the candidate that it supports, or, in the case of Restore Our Future, opposing Newt Gingrich, which has really been the tack that it's been taking for most of the primary seasons.
So, and overall, if I may, Dave, Republicans versus Democrats, and the bottom line of how much each party's sympathizers have been raking in, are Democrats in the same league as Republicans or not?
Democrats are absolutely not in the same league as Republicans, and that's been played out in the past election cycle during the midterms and is continuing in this current presidential election cycle. And in part, that's because there's a Republican primary and there's not a Democratic primary. But, you know, as you go into the general election, the Democrats are extremely scared. Obama's decision this week to support the Priorities USA super PAC, which is supporting him, is clearly a reaction to the realities that we see on the ground, that many of these Republican-focused super PACs are raising incredible amounts of money, and all that firepower that's being trained at each other right now, the Republican versus Republican situation, will all be turned against Democrats come time when the general election starts. So Democrats realize this, and they're swallowing a very sour pill in order to be competitive when the general election starts.
Will this be the biggest money election season ever by your calculation, Dave? What do you think?
It almost assuredly will be the biggest money election ever, and certainly among presidential elections, and really the super PAC situation, and also to a degree nonprofit organizations that can raise unlimited sums of money to advocate
unions, etc. Dave Leventhal, we're out of time right there before the break, but really appreciate your being with us, political influence reporter for Politico. What a title. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about big, big money and the vote. Super PACs, billionaires, and the new reality of American democracy. It was big earlier in the Republican primary, as Dave Leventhal was just saying. Here it is in January during a GOP primary debate in Concord, New Hampshire. Candidate Mitt Romney was questioned by Newt Gingrich about the accuracy of certain pro-Romney super PAC ads, anti-Gingrich, attacking the former House Speaker.
It is your former staff running the PAC. It is your millionaire friends giving to the PAC. And you know some of the ads aren't true. Just say that. Straightforward.
Well, of course it's former staff of mine. And of course there are people who support me. They wouldn't be putting money into a PAC that supports me if they weren't people who support me. And with regards to their ads, I haven't seen them. And as you know, under the law, I can't direct their ads. Oh, Speaker, hold on a second. I can't direct their ads. If there's anything in them that's wrong, I hope they take it out. I hope everything that's wrong is taken out.
Of course, it's former staff of mine, said Mitt Romney. I can't direct their ads under the law. No coordination here. You know, that has looked pretty transparent to some, including comedians Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. Colbert has lampooned the super PAC system by mocking how easily the non-coordination rules might be circumvented. He actually has a super PAC, Americans for a Better Tomorrow Tomorrow. Jon Stewart is in charge of it. In this clip from Comedy Central's The Daily Show in January, the two discuss a campaign ad for Colbert's mock presidential campaign.
Last night, the super PAC that supports you, but which I control independently, ran another ad in South Carolina at a total production cost of $15,000, equating a vote for Herman Cain with a vote for Stephen Colbert. Any thoughts on that, Stephen?
I cannot coordinate with you in any way. And I haven't seen the ad, but when I watched it, I thought that the final shot of a handsome man smiling could have been a little bit longer.
The funny guy's having fun with this campaign season, but it's not really very funny. Joining us now from Washington is Elizabeth Drew, contributor to the New York Review of Books, former Washington correspondent for The New Yorker and The Atlantic Monthly. Her big essay out this month in The New York Review of Books is headlined, "Can We Have a Democratic Election?" Elizabeth Drew, thank you very much for joining us.
You're quite welcome. I'm happy to be with you.
You say in your piece, the election of 2012, that's what we've got right now, has introduced a new kind of politics into American life. What is that, Elizabeth Drew?
Well, the new kind of politics is what you have been talking about, which is more and more dependent not just on very wealthy individuals, but also corporations. We'll come back to this, but the radical, and I mean radical, version of the radical decision of Citizens United is that corporations and unions had been barred from making direct contributions to candidates and campaigns since 1905, since Theodore Roosevelt. Mm. And the Supreme Court, the union ban came later in the 40s, but the Supreme Court smashed all that and said, we're going to do it this way. And it was a very, at best, naive decision. We can come back to this, too, by the way, not based on money equals speech. That's a very widespread misconception. We can come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that. And the other part of my article, which we can't go into today, was at the other, they're not only enabling the very wealthy to have far more impact, at the same time, in many Republican-controlled states, I'm not saying Democrats are angels, but it's not going on in their states. Republican-controlled states are passing laws to make it more difficult for the poor, the elderly, and students to vote. Well, that's a 1-2 punch, very much skewing the electorate or the power in an election.
So make it easier at the top in the billionaires club to pour in whatever you like. Make it harder at the bottom, you're saying, to get in there and participate in the one man, one woman, one vote.
That's right. And so I ask the, I don't think a dramatic question, the actual question, it's a two-part question. Are we really going to have a Democratic election? And are people going to think we had a Democratic election? If they don't, in this age of dissent and demonstration, I mean, Katie, bar the door. It won't be the rather placid acceptance of Bush v. Gore in 2000.
Well, I mean, wealthy people say, look, we want to have our chance to speak out, too. And yes, we've got dollars to put to it, but that's just the way it goes. Anthony Kennedy on the Supreme Court said in the majority opinion, as you cite, he justified the removal of limits on that spending of independent expenditures by saying that they could operate these super PACs independently of campaigns and thus, quoting the justice here, and thus would not give rise to corruption or the appearance of corruption. So what's the problem?
I think the problem is some of these Supreme Court justices haven't had a real life in a long time. That was a very, very naive decision. It was recognized as that at the time. We all knew that already under far more regulated circumstances, so-called independent or issue ad groups, there was coordination. There wasn't supposed to be. But it doesn't take more than a wink or a nod. If you were running your former boss's separate group or your brother's or whatever, or your best friend's, you would know where to put the ad. You would know what he once said. And I've seen two of the candidates, both Romney and Gingrich, say, oh, I didn't have anything to do with the ads. I haven't seen the ads. The ad said 1, 2, 3, 4. So it's just a myth, and Kennedy should have known it was a myth. And the only question is, was this a benign or otherwise kind of decision? I happen to think over time, but we have to live through it in this election, Citizens United just cannot stand. I think the public is going to rise up over this. Let me say just one other thing about that decision. It is usually the case, it has always been the case, that when Congress passed campaign finance reform laws or changed that, it didn't apply to the current or the next election. It was the election after that.
Mm-hmm.
But the Supreme Court, in a very unusual move, made it apply right away. So people didn't have time to try to change it or amend it. Or, that would take long anyway, or get ready for it or protest it or whatever. We're in it. We're in the soup right away.
The Justice Kennedy went on to say in his majority opinion in Citizens United, the appearance of influence or access, furthermore, will not cause the electorate to lose faith in our democracy. What's up,
well,
Elizabeth? You don't buy that assertion?
I would like to send Justice Kennedy my article. occasionally I'm up there, and I think I might slip it to him. It's ridiculous. As I say, I don't know if he was being ingenuous or disingenuous. I will give him the credit of saying he was being ingenuous and just not really clear on how politics work. If you want to see the dissent, look at the dissents on this. They knew perfectly well what this was going to lead to. And
John Paul Stevens saying a democracy cannot function effectively when its constituent members believe laws are being bought and sold.
That's exactly it. And I think there is a very strong public reaction. I think there's going to be more of one. Nothing moves politicians more than when the public really gets angry. And I think that's going to happen. This will not be easy to fix. We can get into that later. A lot of people are backing a very bad idea, which is to amend the First Amendment. No, no, don't touch it. But there are other ways, but it will take time. Meanwhile, here we are in the midst of this most unusual and probably unfair election. Now, that doesn't mean that the money will prevail, but it certainly helps.
Well, we'll look at what might be done with Citizens United, but, I mean, you talk about public anger in response to all this spending, and you may be right. On the other hand, you say we're into a new era here with the scale of money, the freedom with which it can be spent. I mean, is it possible that outcomes get uncoupled even from the anger here because of the millions, tens, hundreds of millions, billions that can be poured in here? Maybe a power can be bought, the shower of negative ads and media can be so thick that even if there's public anger, you win by spending at that scale.
Oh, I'm not saying it won't affect the election. I think it could well affect the election. It could determine the election. I'm not ready to say it will.
Well, then how do you ever turn Citizens United around if it works, if the money works?
I'm saying that just because the money is pouring into this election, or because the money is pouring into this election, mm-hmm. could well tip the balance. The anger is going to come. It's coming. It's showing in some polls, and that means next year when Congress comes in, there could be a clamor. And we'll get to President Obama's decision, but he is all the more obliged now to fight for reform if he is reelected.
Do you think he was wrong to drop his opposition to super PAC spending and say, hey, I need the money to fill up my tank, can't come to a gunfight with a knife?
No, I don't think he was wrong. I think it was inevitable, and the only mistake that he made was not to think ahead and realize that the Republicans are going to raise a great deal of money this way, and am I going to go in disarmed? And this is not as big a change as people think. That super PAC for him for his campaign was already there, formed by two former aides, one the former deputy press secretary. This was not a surprise.
But it was limping along compared to the Republican super PACs until they're hoping his endorsement will kick those contributions up.
Well, that's exactly the point. It wasn't raising much money. And they looked at how much the Republicans were raising and said, gosh, or some word like that, we can't let this go on this way. We're not getting enough money. They're going to kill us with their money. So we have to gin this up a little bit, and the president calling for contributions, and he will send his cabinet officers, which is pretty questionable, I think, to fundraisers. But the candidates themselves can go to fundraisers for their PACs, for their super PACs. I think he had to do it.
Romney's done that, was in Central Park with his super PAC, talking to them.
It's perfectly legal under this bizarre set of laws, but I think that this obliges the president, should he win, or even starting soon, to say, all right, we're doing it this way this year, but we're going to fix this because it's, I had to do it or just give up, surrender, but we are going to have to fix this.
Who's going to believe him when he says we're going to fix it? I mean, after all, he was the first president to decline public funding of his campaign because he was being so successful in fundraising when he ran for the White House. He declined. He stepped out of that system, brought it up to a huge new level. Now, there were a lot of small contributions in there that you could say that's different. But, I mean, he blew the lid off.
He didn't do anything illegal.
He took
a course that's there.
Nobody's doing anything illegal now. At least they protest they're not. The court made a lot of things legal.
I understand there could be some skepticism, even cynicism. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying he is obliged. And whether people believe him or not, he is obliged. And I'm not Pollyanna-ish. It's not my nature about these things. But I think there's enough discomfort about this system, even among the politicians, that something may happen, but we could go into it later, as you say. It is not going to be easy or fast to undo Citizens United because it's now been ruled constitutional. It's not easy to fix. And my only concern is people will try to fix it the wrong way by cutting holes in the First Amendment, at which anybody can play,
Are we at risk here to our democracy itself of turning it into a kind of oligarchs, camp out, oligarchs jamboree here, putting in their 10 million or their 20 million or any number they like and kind of buying the people's democracy?
Yes, we are. That's the point. That's why I called my article, Can We Have a Democratic Election? Now, when Citizens United came down, the big fear and the big talk was not about the individuals. It was about corporations. Unions can't really play at this level. They just don't have that size.
Well, they do, though. I mean, they get in a big way.
I said they can't play at this level. They do not have the amount of money that the endless number of corporations and wealthy individuals have.
Cumulatively, okay.
They just don't. So it's not really anything remotely equal. That's just a fact. But the big fear was corporations. Now, you start looking at some of these super PAC contributions. And by the way, we're not going to know who contributed what until in the last quarter, until after the election. We won't know what's going on.
Well, in some of them, Karl Rove's 501c3, we'll never know necessarily.
Well, that's another, that's right, that's another form of raising mm-hmm. and collecting money. But the big one is how many, the number of corporations, the individuals. Now, look, were it not for Mr. Freis saving Santorum and standing right behind him
this
the other
night.
This
is the Wyoming billionaire, Foster Freis, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of obscene. If it weren't for Sherman Sheldon Adelson, Gingrich might be out of the race. So the decision is being taken away from the voters, and these individual billionaires are saying, oh, I like so-and-so, I'm going to keep you in the race. So it's already greatly distorted the primary system.
Elizabeth Drew, stand by. Our listeners are lining up. Allegra in Springfield, Massachusetts. Allegra, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I want to say that I would be furious at Obama if he didn't take it. I'm working hard in his reelection campaign. I donate $10 a month every single month.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's a hypocrite. He ran in 2008, and it was in 2010 that the Supreme Court changed the ground into quicksand right under our feet. The Republicans are using that money to annihilate the enemy, not debate the issues.
So how is Obama different if he raises the same kind of money? What's the difference?
The difference is that he had no control over when this happened or how it happened or how the Republicans are using the money. He would be, I don't want to work hard for him
mm-hmm.
and be donating $10 a month mm-hmm. and be out talking to my neighbors only to have billionaires kill him.
So bring all the money in, you say, working for Obama, Allegra. But then, I mean, everybody's in the quicksand in a way. But I take your point. I take your point. Stefan in Columbus, Georgia. You're on the air, Stefan.
Yeah, my name is, like you said, my name is Stefan. I'm in Columbus, Georgia. I just
yeah.
wanted to say that, you know, you've seen a strong trend towards crony capitalism, in my opinion. Whenever you are able to lobby and buy the votes, you know, with campaign contributions and super PACs, you lose the motivation to work for the interest of the citizens, and you move at that point towards oligarchy, like you've been calling, and like your guest said, Newt Gingrich may not be in the race at this point if it weren't for the wealthy donor. I believe that you'll see a backlash at some point soon whenever people start to realize that this has happened.
But, you know, Mitt Romney, for example, is rich on his own on his own account. Maybe Newt Gingrich's big backer, Sheldon Adelson, just evens the scales there, Stefan.
Well, and that's true. But the thing is that, you know, you move away from the idea that the best man for the job will be elected and move more towards who has the most money, regardless of whether or not you have, you know, and people are have every right to do whatever they want with their own money. But once you move away from that, then you're moving into personal interest and
no question, no question. Stefan, we're up against a break, but I appreciate your call. Personal interest and a lot of money behind it and a lot of freedom to act on it right now with the Supreme Court ruling. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about big, big money and the vote. Talking about super PACs and billionaires and the new reality of American democracy. Elizabeth Drew is with us. Her big piece in the New York Review of Books is, Can We Have a a Democratic election in this year. You can read that. You can get a link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. She joins us today from Washington. Newt Gingrich, said it's going to be all about the people power defeating money power, describing his stand-up against Mitt Romney. Of course, he's got some very big money behind him as well. But here he is on January 31st after losing the Florida primary to Romney.
We're going to have people power defeat money power in the next 6 months.
Maybe, but he's got a lot of money power behind him right now as well. We'll see how long it lasts. Sheldon Adelson, the big casino owner in Las Vegas and in Macau, China, all over the place, saying if Gingrich doesn't work out, he'll move that money to Romney. Let's hear from one of these billionaires. A little tape here. This is last month, talking with NPR host Robert Siegel on All Things Considered. Billionaire Foster Freeze, a major backer of Rick Santorum's Super PAC Red, White, and Blue Fund. This is a Wyoming mutual fund billionaire. He defended Super PACs and said billionaires should have their ability to keep a presidential campaign afloat, that George Soros and Peter Lewis had done it earlier for Democrats. Here's Foster Freeze, backer of Rick Santorum.
It's interesting, hardly any people raised these questions back when George Soros put in $20 million and Peter Lewis put in $14 million to bring down George Bush. I think you also want to make a point that CNN, for example, is a corporation. So when they put on a TV show, which maybe could show favoritism towards a given candidate or against a given candidate, that certainly could be considered as a political contribution as well in terms of millions and millions and millions of dollars of the media that goes out.
Through Foster Freeze's eyes, hey, everybody, one way or another, seems like a contribution. Even the media, a corporation. Even the media is a corporation, so why shouldn't he put his money in? Elizabeth Drew is with us from Washington. Her question is hanging in our ears. Can we have a Democratic election in this environment? Jim in West Hartford, Connecticut. Jim, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. Listen, the previous caller said that people have a right to do what they want with their own money, and you agreed with him right before the break. I say, no, they don't. In this case, in this very specific case, I'm a bottom-oriented oriented guy, Tom. This is not a complicated issue.
Okay.
If money is free speech, which it's not, I mean, the idea that this is some kind of physical property is absurd. But if the law of this country is such that the Supreme Court says it is, in the 70s or now, then what they're saying is that since money is free speech, the more money you have, the more free speech you have. That, sir, is the antithesis of democracy.
Jim, we got it loud and clear. Elizabeth, this equation you've been thinking about a lot.
Can I get into
this? Yes, please.
The court did not say, this is a big surprise, in Buckley-Valeo.
Back in 76. Mm-hmm.
It does not say flatly that money equals speech. It said in certain circumstances, people cannot be limited from spending, and that was individual candidates. In other words, if Mitt Romney wanted to put in $100 million, he could not be limited. By the way, he does not have enough money to buy this election on his own.
Even with his fortune, yes.
We're talking billions of dollars,
mm-hmm,
okay?
Mm-hmm.
It said the personal expenditures couldn't be limited, and also independent groups could not be limited. So they took that. A lot of people who oppose campaign finance strictures cite Buckley wrong. They say it said money equals speech. It did not say that across the board.
But in Citizens United, this was put forward First Amendment issue, was it not?
No. The Citizens United decision took the independent groups issue, and they spread it out. And they said, as long as they're independent, which they're famously not, but by the way, it would be bad if they weren't independent, because then people could, go out and make ads for someone that they don't want. So it's good. They need to be under some sort of purview of the campaigns, whether they say
though they are technically,
not.
Officially, and legally not, and I suppose it's prosecutable if they were, as the law stands now.
It would be worth a fine.
Well,
yes, they would actually be limited to $5,000.
Okay, that's not much of a bump in the road, is it?
No. So, A, Buckley didn't say that across the board. It just said, if you, what they really said is, if you're taking public financing, which presidents might or might not, you said, as you say, Obama mm-hmm. didn't take, then you are limited. But it was a actually very narrow construction. But people who don't like campaign finance reform, they say, oh, they said, but they didn't say that. So what Citizens United did was just spread the idea that it used to be you had to take an issue ad, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to try to defeat me, you would say, we're for the environment. Call Elizabeth Drew and ask her why she opposes the environment.
Right.
That's an issue ad. Now, they took that away. You don't have to be an issue ad. You can be for me, against me, you can smear me, you can do whatever you want.
And it's going on a mile a minute, or has in the primaries. There's still issue ads over in the Karl Rove zone, but those can be pretty effective, too.
Right. As your first caller very wisely said, they're not using it to argue the issues. They're using it to destroy each other. And your other caller, more recent caller, said the public's going to be disgusted. I think, you know, as you know, that's what I've been saying. It's still going to be hard to fix, but I don't think Citizens United, in 10 years, I don't think it's going to be here at that.
I'd like to talk about how that's going to happen. On Facebook, Pat says, he looks at all this and says, legalized bribery. Brian says, the money and anonymity fundamentally undermine the values and institutions of a republic. Michael, another reason for the average person to unplug.
That's the problem. I'm going to brag here for a minute. I'm going to say the fact. I wrote the first book, you know, in the post-Buckley era about money and politics,
mm-hmm.
called Money and Politics.
Yep.
And I said then, I called it legalized bribery. Now, one thing that's very important to point out, it doesn't necessarily buy a vote. It buys access. Access is the coin of the realm here. The person who gives money can get in to see the senator, the president, whatever.
Well, and access means policy. Otherwise, it's just a social visit.
And you talk about what you want. And so, let's say Newt were elected. Do you think Sheldon Adelson, it would take him very long to reach him on the phone?
Well, and these things are very relevant. I mean, we're in the middle, I read in the newspapers today, of a big fight with Israel over whether, you know, where Iran is on its nuclear
right.
program,
right.
whether there might be war or not.
Right.
Sheldon Adelson, very, very strong Israel supporter. That's his right.
That's
but,
right.
But what's he buying?
He doesn't get to buy it. He does now under this law, but he shouldn't be able to buy it.
But we wonder how it all adds up. Zach in Lexington, Kentucky, you're on the air, Zach.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Pretty well. What do you think, Zach?
Well, the reason I called was I always like to look at effectiveness in political campaigns.
Yeah.
And I would say that the results in the Republican primaries in terms of turnout have been abysmal for the amount of money that has been spent. They didn't even begin to approach more than 10% in the last several primary caucuses and in Missouri. And I'm reminded of that old saying that a fool and his money are soon parted.
So you can spend all you like, but you may not buy the victory or the influence, Zach?
Can I say something about that?
One moment, Elizabeth. Let's just get it.
Sure.
What do you think, Zach?
I think people are sick to death of large sums of money being talked about and how they're spent and how they are going to buy this election. The Republicans are not going to change their mind about Obama. The Democrats aren't going to change their mind about the president. The people that are going to be influenced are independents, independent thinkers. And throwing huge sums of money at the independent voter is a very big mistake, in my opinion.
Zach, let me give it to Elizabeth. Madam Drew, what about it? You spend billions and end up with an empty bag, maybe.
Well, I don't think that the money is there to get turnout. I think the lack of turnout is they don't like the candidates very much. They don't like, you know, they.
Mm-hmm.
The polls all show that Romney is not beloved. Gingrich is not cut out to be a national figure, a president, let's face it.
Well, he was Speaker of the House.
He was Speaker of the House. He was thrown out of that job after 4 years by his colleagues for having made colossal misjudgments. He's known to be erratic, and this is why the Republican establishment, such as it is freaking over the idea of Gingrich being the nominee. I think it's unlikely he will be. Santorum was a mediocre senator of no great distinction. He lost his last election by 18 points. He ran because he wanted to run. So these are not people that make you rush to the polls because you so fervently believe in them.
But to the point just made here, maybe they'll spend all these billions and it and they won't really get the outcome they want. Maybe they can't really buy the election in the end.
Wouldn't that be great? But they're still spending it and they're trying to have the influence and, you know, maybe they will. We don't know. But this gets back to Obama and your first caller saying she'd be very angry if he didn't take the money because that's the game now. And as I said, it obliges him all the more to fight reform. You said, who can believe him? Well, believe him or not, he's obliged to do it. And it'll be hard.
Let's go to John in Manchester, Connecticut. John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I like some of the things your guest is saying, but I would like to point out that this basically has to do with businessmen and corporations tend to vote Republicans. But like the billionaire from Wyoming said, no one complained when George Soros gave the Democrats. Lawyers tend to give the Democrats. Hollywood moguls and movie stars and the business industry or the music industry tends to give the Democrats and outwardly support them, which influences the young voter. Isn't this really just about silencing Republicans and the business and corporation world? Isn't that really what this is all about?
Well, we'll pick it up. Of course, a lot of people did complain about the Soros money, but you're right, John, that was kind of partisan complaining. They were Republicans complaining in those days, but we'll look at it. Elizabeth, you hear the skepticism there saying, hey, you don't like the way the money's being spent because it's being spent for Republicans. And they have,
Soros is a favorite whipping boy. In fact, as your Politico reporter pointed out, it was under very different circumstances and under restrictions. Now, George Soros' money, which was really for congressional campaigns, it was so ineffective that he's on the sidelines. He's been on the sidelines ever since. So we could go on and on about that. We could go on and on about Hollywood. There actually are some Republicans there, but never mind. You know, there's Wall Street, there are corporations. No, it's just not, it's not the equivalent.
Susan in Columbia, South Carolina. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I think the amounts of money being spent on these campaigns are ridiculous when we have people starving here in America. And also, I would hope that American people are smart enough to base their electoral decisions on fact and research they have done and not on a TV commercial they've seen.
Do you think that that's realistic, though, Susan? I mean, you just had a big primary in South Carolina. There was a lot of advertising, a lot of it negative there. Do you think that had a significant or even decisive influence on the outcome in South Carolina?
I think it probably did on many people, but for me it didn't because I'd already made my decision long before the primary even got here by doing research on the backgrounds of the candidates.
Bless you. Keep it up, and thank you for your call, Susan. Eric in Waterloo, Iowa. You're on the air, Eric.
Hi, Tom. The question that I, or like the thing that scares me the most about all these billions of dollars getting tossed around behind closed doors and nobody knows exactly where it's coming from, are the deals that are being made behind closed doors.
Because people like, will want something for their money, you're saying? They'll want some quid pro quo.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. It's not so much the campaign or, you know, the smear ads or whatever that I could care less about that. I want to know what these candidates have promised in order to get these monies to make those ads.
Eric, thanks for your call. Elizabeth, what gets sold here or does anything?
It's usually more subtle than that. It's usually not flat out. I'll give you money if you take this position. Now, it may be a coincidence that Gingrich has taken the position of Mr. Adelson. There's been a long controversy over whether the American embassy in Israel should stay in Tel Aviv where it is or go to Jerusalem. It can't go to Jerusalem because of security, because of the city is divided.
But Sheldon Adelson would like it too. And Newt Gingrich said, yes, sir.
He said he'd do a first day. It would be executive order. That was unwise. But normally, as I said, it's buying access. It's getting an ear. And that's the coin of the realm. It means they don't make a deal now saying, you know, if I give you the money, will you do this for the labor law? It's not that. That's actually a crime.
You said that you think within 10 years or so, Citizens United will be reversed. How would that happen? That would require changing the membership at this point, I guess, of the Supreme Court or some of those members changing their minds, which they don't appear very likely to do. How's that going to change?
Another way is to show in a congressional hearing to gather the evidence and show, A, they're not independent, B, there is at least an appearance of corruption, which was Kennedy's standard. And you make that finding, and you pass a law saying they can't do this, and it gets tested, and it goes back to the Supreme Court. As I say, Anthony Kennedy is not a wild ideologue. Who knows how long any of these members are going to stay? And you present them the evidence and say, well, you got it wrong, fellas. And I just think it's just not tenable. You had some calls on this. I think the public can't stand it. I think a number of the polls will say, my God, if I get in, I'm going to get super PACs against me, or I got them this time, and I can't handle it. I just think it is just not tenable. What worries me is people who ought to know better are saying, well, we should amend the First Amendment. No, anybody can play at that. Then religious groups can come along and say, well, there should be no separation between church and state. They're a lot stronger than the campaign finance reform people are. Leave the First Amendment alone. Do it through legislation and then get another case before the Supreme Court showing that the premise was just wrong.
Let free speech be free speech. Let it not be just a billionaire's microphone.
Right.
Elizabeth Drew, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
I enjoyed it very much.
The big piece in the New York Review of Books is Can We Have a Democratic Election? You can link to it through our website. Elizabeth Drew with us there from Washington. Thank you very much. Listeners, there will be more on this throughout this campaign season, and we will pay attention to what may happen down the road with Citizens United and all the laws around this. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and at On Point Radio. Follow me at Tom Ashbrook NPR. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.